from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Be it ever so humble, that Social Security check has landed every month for the last almost 80 years in millions of homes across this land. It changed life for the retired especially. But a straightforward idea has grown a huge thicket of rules and provisions. It can be hard to know exactly what you're due. Economist Lawrence Kotlikoff says the whole system is in trouble, out of whack, but until we fix it, he says, you should at least know what you're owed. This hour on Point, understanding what you've got coming under Social Security, at least for now. Joining me now in the studio is Lawrence Kotlikoff, professor of economics at Boston University. The Economist magazine called him one of the world's 25 most influential economists. He's out with a new book, co-authored with Philip Moeller and Paul Solman. It's called Get What's Yours, The Secrets to Maxing Out Your Social Security. It has shot to number one on Amazon and stayed there. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org, by the way. Lawrence Kotlikoff, welcome back to On Point.
Great to be with you, Tom.
All right. I've been getting my statements in the mail for years. I read them. It looks pretty straightforward. It says, here's your age. Here's when you could retire. If you retire here or here or here, here's what you'll get. It looks simple. Are you making it look hard to get us to buy your lovely book?
Unfortunately not. The system has 2,728 rules in its handbook, and it has literally tens of thousands of rules in its program operating manual system that are there to explain the rules. They're all written in geek speak. So it turns out that what you can take if you're married depends on what your spouse is doing, and what your spouse does depends on what you're doing or can do. So there's all these interactions that aren't explained in that benefit statement. What divorcees can do is different from what married people can do. Disabled people have different rules. Widowed people have different choices. So the benefit statement is not even correct on its own face, because the benefit estimate that Social Security is using is making very strong, crazy assumptions. Really, it assumes no inflation will ever occur again in the country, and that we'll also have no wage growth. And both of these are two elements that dramatically affect the level of benefits. So for people that are 50, for example, those benefit statements can be understating the benefit by 20%. We talk about this in the book. And, you know, here you go. You know, you can't even trust their benefit estimate.
No, wait a minute. Let's pause right there for a minute. The numbers that come out of their benefit estimate that do not look handsome or large, but I'm sure a lot of people think, well, how much of what I need would that amount to? And for many, many Americans, that's the whole thing. That's what they retire on. They don't have savings, and Social Security is it. So you're saying what they have there overstates or understates what people are likely to actually receive?
So for many people, it's understating what they're going to be getting. For many people under 60, and it's easy to construct cases where they're understating by 20% the benefit you're going to get for somebody who's 50. For other people who are still working, they are assuming that you're going to continue to work to your full retirement age, and that may produce an overestimate of their benefits. So it's just not accurate and not reliable. And then when you take two unreliable numbers, one for yourself and one for your spouse, and try and figure out how to optimize jointly, then you can get very bad advice. And the other aspect of this is that the Social Security folks are not well trained. They don't know the tens of thousands of rules about the rules. So they're routinely giving very bad advice, incorrect advice.
Even if you call up and try and do your homework.
You call up, you go into the office. In my experience, and this is very crude, just my own personal rough estimate, no documentation, I think 40% of the time you get the wrong answer from Social Security.
That's pretty bad. Let's step back for just a second. You're sort of the how-to guy here. The doctors in the house, listeners, if you have questions on Social Security, no matter what your age or no matter what the range of the question, Lawrence Kotlikoff is probably on it. You can join us at 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. Right down to the details or up to the very big picture. Let's take the big picture before we get into some of these very important but very specific circumstances. I mean, yes, it's important to people, but is it going to be around? You call yourself a Cassandra about Social Security. You say it's in giant trouble.
Yeah, I've been probably the most prominent economist talking about the take-as-you-go policies that younger people, that successive generations of Congress and and administrations have been engaged in the kind of Ponzi scheme of taking from young people, giving to old people, telling young people they're going to get theirs. And we're now in a situation where, according to the Social Security Trustees Report in Table 6F1 that was released last July, the system is 33% underfinanced. To put that in perspective, the Detroit pensions were only 20% underfinanced. The entire fiscal operation of the country appears to be about 58% underfinanced. So Social Security is in somewhat better shape than the overall fiscal enterprise, but it's in terrible shape. So we're going to have to fix it, but it will be fixed for people that are currently collecting. No, it won't be changed for them. Politically, it's just too difficult.
Currently collecting, you mean people who are 62 or over or disabled?
Yeah, and I think anybody who's probably 55 and older, it's not going to be changed for them. And I think the way it will get changed is not by actually changing the rules of the benefits, but probably by increasing the taxation of the benefits through the federal income tax. We're now taxing 85% of the benefits. It could go to 100%. Now, I may be wrong.
Wait. Taxing 85% of the benefits. So people would pay income tax even when they're receiving Social Security.
Yeah, up to 85% of your benefits are subject to taxation. And here's another aspect of the expropriation of younger people that I've been screaming about for decades now. And my co-authors, by the way, have different views of this.
Duly noted. You sort of laid out three ways there when it comes to the future and the whole program.
Yeah, so they don't ascribe to everything I'm saying about the system's future and its design. But the rules are
For young people, yeah, you were saying.
Yeah, for young people, system is not going to be indexing the thresholds beyond which your Social Security benefits are subject to taxation. So for everybody who's young, a full 85% of their benefits will be subject to taxation. This was put into law back in 1983 in the Reagan tax reform.
When does that kick in?
Well, it's happening all the time because every year the thresholds are fixed, but the benefit levels are going up because of inflation. And they're not indexed. So this is one of the few aspects of the federal income tax that's explicitly not indexed. So it's a method to raise the taxation for future generations.
Which in effect means cutting Social Security payouts over time very steadily without calling it a reduction.
Right. And this is all about hiding what you're doing. And this is really the essence of complexity here. Why is it that we have such a complex system? The basic formula for the benefit at age A of a spouse, so you write that mathematically as B of A, mm-hmm. and you write on the, and then you say equals what? Well, if you write down the formula, there's 10 mathematical functions on the right-hand side. One is in four dimensions. Some are minimum facts functions. Some are maximum. One's a function, minimum of a maximum function.
I'm totally lost already.
Yeah, exactly. So it could not be more complicated.
I take that. We've got questions coming in. I'm going to begin to bring them to you because people really want to know. It makes a big difference. And again, many, many Americans live entirely on Social Security. All kinds of inequities here. I mean, you point out that the kind of things you're describing are more important to higher income Americans because they've got more to lose in Social Security. They take more from it. But if we're in such bad shape collectively, what on earth are you doing teaching people how to max out? And you're not talking about a few bucks more. You're talking of tens of thousands, maybe $100,000 more over a lifetime. What are you doing? You're hastening the bankrupting of Social Security.
Well, we actually, for poor people, lower income people, Social Security is disproportionately more important. But for the rich, it's in absolute terms the most important. So we point out an example where optimizing your Social Security benefits can increase your lifetime benefits by about $400,000 in the extreme. Now, one of the things I want to hasten to say is that many of these gains to individuals is not really coming out of the system's finances because the system is designed such that, for example, your retirement benefit, when you take it at 70, you can take a 76% higher benefit over and above inflation's adjustment versus taking it at 62. Now, if you take it at 70, if everybody takes a retirement benefits at 70, it's not going to cost the system anything more because what's going to happen is that a lot of people won't make it to 70.
Mm-hmm. And it delays that payout and time matters.
And so as a present expected value calculation, an actual calculation for the system's finances, there's no worsening. But individually, we're going to get much higher real value from the system because we're going to be getting insurance from the system. The system is delivering insurance. So let me give you an analogy here. Think about homeowners insurance. Suppose that we had no homeowners insurance. The government had to organize the market. Mm-hmm. So they, for them, it would be a break even. They would take in premiums. They would pay out claims. It would be a break even. The government wouldn't net any money. But for people that did not otherwise have homeowners insurance, this would be of enormous economic value. And we would want to have a book saying everybody should get homeowners insurance, and the value to them is X. We could measure that. I'm an economist. We have ways to measure the value of insurance policies.
But you've got measures you're advising people to take in here that other economists are calling ploys, not just getting what's yours, but a ploy, kind of a trick or sort of working the edges of this, not what was intended. I mean, that sounds like hastening the bankrupting of a system in trouble.
We do mention benefits that people are not aware of and that they need to. I don't call it ploys. You know, I have a friend, Glenn Lowry, whose wife tragically passed away. He's probably been interviewed by you. Mm-hmm. He's one of the top professors in the world in economics. He had no idea about widower's benefits. His wife, Linda, worked every year of her life till age 58, you know, as an adult, and she paid 12.4% of her pay to Social Security. And she passes away. She and her employer pays that combined tax. She passes away. And then she has really paid in for widow's benefits, for widower benefits, in effect, life insurance benefits for her husband and for the kids. And they have no knowledge about it. Until I told Glenn, he would not have collected the $120,000 that I told him about.
That's a big deal for any American family. For many American families, that would be huge. Lawrence Kutlikoff writes about it, co-author of the new book, Get What's Yours, The Secrets to Maxing Out on Your Social Security. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about claiming your Social Security benefits, understanding what you've got coming, if it's still there, and how to get it from a very complicated system. My guest is Lawrence Kutlikoff, co-author with Philip Moeller and Paul Solman of the new book, number one on Amazon since it came out. Hard to get a hold of a hardback copy. Gives you a sense of how focused people are on this. It's important to many. The book is Get What's Yours, The Secrets to Maxing Out Your Social Security. Here's a public service announcement back in 1978 brought to you by the Social Security Administration, reminding Americans that that little card can make a big difference in their lives.
There are four times when it's important to have this small card. If you're severely disabled, Social Security is there to help. When someone you depend on dies, Social Security helps keep things going. When you retire, Social Security helps you enjoy the things you worked for. And there's Medicare for hospital and medical bills. Find out about your lifetime protection. Call us.
PSA from 1978. But these days, if you rely on it, and millions of Americans do, every dollar counts. Here's a WNEP interview from Scranton, Pennsylvania, with the senior citizen Louise Christopher, saying last year's 1.7% increase in monthly benefits, $22 for most seniors, didn't amount to much.
Nothing. You go to the grocery store, it's doubled now from what I paid even 2 years ago.
And Frank Rothenbecker says whatever they get in that check, the store knows it. Up go the prices.
As soon as they see that we're going to get the Social Security increased, I'll bet you your bloomers that we're going to get a raise here.
You'll bet your bloomers. Be careful what you bet. Lawrence Kutlikoff is with me in the studio. We've got a lot of questions for you. Let's begin to go to them. People take this seriously. It's a big part of a lot of people's retirement. Mimi in Nashville, Tennessee. Mimi, you're on the air with Larry Kutlikoff.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have been told two different things in person by Social Security officials.
Okay.
I am divorced. I was married over 20 years. I was told that I could claim spousal Social Security benefits at age 62 and a half. But one official told me I have to stay single until I'm at least 60 years old.
They're getting into your business, Mimi.
I know. And not remarry. The other official said, you need to stay single until you're 62 and a half.
Hold it right there. Larry Kutlikoff, respond, please.
Okay. I think they both gave you the wrong information, basically. That's really sad.
Mimi's 50 years old. She was married for 10 years and divorced. Yeah. Now she's trying to figure out spousal benefits.
They both gave you really terrible information. if you're reporting accurately what they said. Let me just correct one thing that I said in the prior segment. The provision about not indexing the thresholds beyond which Social Security benefits are taxable was done under the Greenspan Commission. It wasn't part of the Reagan tax reform. Just want to make that clear.
Yep.
But okay, so Mimi, here's the deal. If you try and take your divorcee spousal benefit before full retirement age, you will be what's called deemed. You'll be forced to take your retirement benefit as well. So then they're going to give you basically the larger of your divorcee spousal benefit, which is going to be reduced, and your retirement benefit, which would also be reduced. So they'll compare these two. Most likely, your retirement benefit will exceed your divorcee spousal benefit. They'll therefore give you your retirement benefit. Therefore, you will lose your spousal benefit, your divorcee spousal benefit. So this is a terrible catch-22, a gotcha. It's one of our primary gotchas in the chapter in our book where we specify a list of 25 different gotchas. One of the worst ones, the deeming gotcha. So in order for you to collect a spousal benefit just by itself and not have to take your retirement benefit at the same time, and doing that really means you lose one of the two benefits because, again, they only give you the larger of the two. What you have to do is wait till full retirement age, file just for
66.
Your 66, and probably in your case, might be a little bit older. Then you file just for your retirement benefit. Sorry, for your divorcee spousal benefit, and then at 70, you can collect your retirement benefit, which will start at its largest possible value.
That's optimal. Yeah. That's assuming that Mimi can afford to wait until she's 70.
Now it is true that if you do get married at any time, your divorcee spousal benefit will go away. Your divorcee widow benefit will go away if you get married before age 60. So so both people were actually giving you incorrect information. If you're correctly recounting.
But they're right that if she gets married, she in the wrong time frame, she could lose something here.
Well, they said that she could stay single until 60 and then get her spousal benefit, which is not true. If she gets married at any time, she cannot get a divorcee spousal benefit. And she has to be married after 60 to get a divorcee widow benefit. By the way, you know, there are people that are 58 who are married and had been divorced to high earners and want to get a divorcee spouse. And those high earners have passed away and they're 58. And they're asking the question, could I get divorced and get remarried after 60 to collect the divorcee widow benefit? And I believe the answer is yes.
Maybe let me ask you in Nashville, can you wait until 70 to collect the major portion of your Social Security? Does that work with your financial situation, Mimi?
I suppose I could start buying beanie weenies right now.
What do you mean? Eating cat food? Is that what you mean? Yeah, maybe. That sounds like a long time to eat cat food.
Well, you know, there's a huge payoff. You're going to get a benefit check every month, a retirement benefit check that's 76% higher between 70 and 100 if you make it to 100. So one of the things we're really trying to stress in the book is that there's a huge risk here when it comes to living. It's not – the risk that we face in retirement is not really dying, because if we die, we're going to go to heaven. We don't need money. The real risk is living, and it's living to 100 and living off of cat food. So getting a higher – 76% higher check that you're opening every month is going to feel a whole lot better than not. So we're really pushing people to wait to collect. But it's not optimal for everybody to wait. That's certainly not the case. I can give you an example of a 63-year-old. This is an actual household, a 63-year-old husband. He's got a wife who's 45 who's decided to stop working, so she's not going to get hit by the earnings test, and take care of their disabled child. The optimal thing for them to do is for him to take his benefit early, his retirement benefit early at 63, and then that will be able to activate benefits for his child and his wife. His child will get a child benefit. The wife will get a child and care spousal benefit. And even though he'll take a hit on his own retirement benefit, they'll get their benefits starting earlier. Then when he reaches full retirement age, what he can do, and this is true for anybody who has started their retirement benefits early and currently collecting, anybody who's listening, let's say who's 63 or 4 or whatever, 62, and started their benefits early, they at full retirement age can suspend their benefit and start it up again at 70 at a 32% higher level than the level at which they suspended it.
Why take it in the first place then?
Well, so he's taking it at 63 in order to be able to activate benefits for the spouse, the wife, and the child. Otherwise, they can't collect. So, I mean, this is part of the crazy aspects of these rules. Why should it be that a disabled child can't collect benefits until the parent has filed for retirement benefit? And why are we penalizing the parent for filing by forcing them to take benefits early at a reduced level?
Okay, I feel like I'm tumbling through rule land already, and we've barely scratched the surface of the 2,000 and some rules or pages of rules. Mimi, I hope that helps you. I mean, let me ask you this. Remind us of the range of payouts within Social Security depending on earnings over a lifetime. To give us a sense of why even for the affluent this is quite important, more important in absolute terms, what's the range of payouts from low earners to high earners that Americans might get from Social Security?
Well, it could be anywhere from $500 to $3,000 a month, basically. So there's a big range. So getting $3,000 a month is obviously a big number. And if you can jack that up by 32% or 76% by being patient, becomes a much bigger number.
Heidi writes to us here. She says, I agree with the professor that the whole system should be scrapped and replaced. I think you do have that position. With a real safety net, though, she says, one designed to help the poorest of the poor survive, not the current system that helps the rich pay their country club dues in retirement. What do you say?
Well, there's a lot of features in the system that we find are I think my co-authors share this opinion – are very biased towards low-income people.
Biased meaning favoring or disfavoring?
Disfavoring. Mm-hmm. There's some other things that are favoring lower-income people. The benefit formula is very progressive, but if you have single non-never married people, they are really paying in taxes to help married people who tend to be higher income. And then two-earner couples are, in effect, subsidizing single-earner couples. So, and this has been known for years, at least to economists who studied the system, I'm not sure that members of Congress really understand what they've made over the years. I would hope that everybody would buy a copy of the book for themselves and another one for their congressman.
Yeah, let's go to that question of government employment. Brian in Leverett, Massachusetts. Brian, you're on the air.
Well, hello, Tom.
Hi.
Are you?
Okay. What's your question?
Well, there's a provision called the windfall elimination provision.
Okay.
Which
sounds good. Oh, no, sounds good when you say windfall and bad when you say elimination.
It's not a windfall. Trust me.
Okay.
What it does is it reduces the Social Security that you would normally receive because you are receiving. You're also eligible for a state retirement.
Okay.
There's roughly 13 states that have this provision, Massachusetts being one.
So if you worked for the state and have a pension coming there, your Social Security payout takes a hit? Is that the idea, Brian?
If you have a pension that's coming from non-covered employment, and it's not just for the 13 states, it's in any job that's not covered by Social Security, you could be working abroad and then be hit by this windfall elimination provision when it comes to collecting your retirement benefit. You'll get a worse formula being used to collect to calculate your retirement benefit.
So, Brian, what's your question or your gripe there?
I understand that. What my concern is that there seems to be this mysterious calculation that goes on that determines what your benefit will be, and it's also assumed that you haven't, worked substantially in a Social Security job. And because I was in education, I needed something else to support my teaching.
Yeah, like many teachers, yeah.
And so I had, 80% of my working career I paid into Social Security. And there is what they call a substantial earnings number, which is determines whether you're eligible for this or that year for a total of years that you would be able to apply towards your Social Security retirement. And many times I would miss that by $100, $200. And so I am being penalized a large percentage of my Social Security under the assumption that I'm double dipping.
Brian, let us dive right into it. We're looking at Social Security and the maze of rules around it. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Larry, what do you say to Brian? Is he getting penalized here? Is it fair?
No, it is not fair. I think the windfall elimination provision, like so many other provisions, is just very crude. They're trying to offset the fact that they don't want people that were not paying in Social Security benefits for many years to show up and appear to be low-income people and then take advantage of the progressive nature of the benefit formula. So there is some rationale for the windfall elimination provision. But as you say, it's very crude, and the substantial earnings limit, if you just miss that, then you don't get any credit whatsoever for having contributed a lot of money in terms of reducing this effect of this windfall elimination provision. Let me just say that there is one, if you want to call it this, silver lining. When you pass away, the windfall elimination provision will no longer apply, and your survivor, your widow, your survivor benefits will not be WEPT.
WEPT.
WEPT. That's the acronym for the windfall elimination provision.
Oh, I see. So if you have a survivor, it will go back up for them.
It'll go back up to the regular formula.
Brian, it sounds like Larry agrees that with your sense of not full and fair treatment, I think it's a pretty slim – it is a consolation, but maybe a little slim that the step you have to take to bounce it back up. I appreciate your call. Gail in Canton, Ohio. Gail, you're on.
Hello, Tom. Hello, hi. Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I turned 62 last month.
Okay.
And 2 weeks later, I officially retired from work. I had researched ahead of time Social Security. Both my parents died young. Dad was 52, Mom was 63. Okay. I want to enjoy life now. But I'm physically and mentally capable of working. So this is kind of an experiment for me. I've got my first Social Security check because I was a widow. I'm getting 2 months of widow benefits before my benefit kicks in.
Okay. And what's your monthly now, Gail?
My monthly right now as a widow is $1,065 a month. Starting in April, it's $1,447 a month.
All in. And what's your question?
Okay. When you talked about taxable, I thought that $1,447 a month was going to be federal tax anyway. I thought it was going to be tax-free. As long as I have no other income, that $1,447 comes to approximately $17,000 a year.
Yeah.
Am I going to be taxed on that as long as I don't have any other income?
Gail, the answer is no. You're going to be under the threshold from everything I understand. If you know, in the future, people that were in your situation, because the thresholds aren't going to be changing and the benefits are going to be increased with inflation and economy-wide real wage growth, somebody like you, you know, 20 years from now or 30 years from now would be taxed on their benefits, but not you. Now, in your situation, what you're doing is, I hope, is taking the widow benefit right now and then waiting till 70 to take your retirement benefit when it will start as high as possible. That's the way you're going to be maximizing your lifetime benefits. Now, I realize that your parents died young, but there's no guarantee that you're going to die young. We can't count on dying on time. So we have to really think about the worst case scenario here, which is living to 100. We can't plan on dying on time. We only have one life to die, to lose, okay? And we may lose that at 100. So we have to value Social Security on that basis. So I'm encouraging you to take your widow benefit for the next number of years through age 70, and then at 70, start your retirement benefit.
Implicit in that may be working or going back to work if she's tried retirement.
Well, between now and 60, for retirement age, she's going to be subject to the earnings test. So she may lose some benefits, but then there's something called the adjustment of the reduction factor, which may kick her back up. So, yeah.
Gail in Canton, Ohio, thank you for calling. Hope that's helpful. We're talking about Social Security. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about claiming your Social Security benefits, understanding what you've got coming, if it's still there, and how to get it from a very complicated system. Lawrence Kutlikoff is co-author, along with Philip Mohler and Paul Solomon, of the new book, Get What's Yours, The Secrets to Maxing Out Your Social Security. You can join us. What's your question on tapping Social Security? Lawrence Kutlikoff is with me in the studio. The doctor is ready to take your calls. Anthony in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Anthony, you're on the air.
Hello, Larry.
Hi.
My question is a little bit frustrating and complicated. First, I'd like to say I would love to max out on my Social Security benefit, but I'm 39, and after 16 years in the military and some service overseas, I was part of the military's Wounded Warrior Program. And in that program, you know, they direct you to file for Social Security because in their own rules, it says that that is you can file during that time because you're not doing your job and you're going through medical issues. And I had to have, you know, some surgeries and other medical procedures. And there was just a lot of difficulty in navigating that. I actually went to the Social Security office with a page out of their own rule book that shows the exemption for being in the Wounded Warrior Program, and it took 40 minutes for the person interviewing me to talk to their boss, and their boss had to talk to their boss and actually confirm so I could even initially file.
Well, and this is where the military is advising you to go, Anthony, so you can have a means of support.
Correct. So after 3 months or so, they denied me because I was actually waiting on my second surgery. They denied me and said they needed more information and once I would get my surgery. So I actually had a person call me every month to find out when I was going to have my next surgery. 2 weeks before my surgery, they sent me another denial letter saying I can still work. Well, obviously because I haven't had this other surgery yet. So after having the next surgery, they said, well, we need more documentation. We need your disability from the Army or from the VA, and it took a year to get that paperwork. I finally was just medically retired in March, actually March 3rd, and when I finally got that paperwork, they're like, well, it took, you know, it's too long. It's been over a year. So I was denied again, and they said I can file an appeal, but at this point, I would have to get an attorney, which the attorney would take most of the money anyway, so is it really worth you know, navigating all the headaches.
And Anthony, what's your aspiration here? You're looking to get on Social Security and then you'd be on it for the rest of your life? Is that the idea or?
Well, no, like right now I just got medically retired and I had just found out that I'm going to need another surgery. So I can't work yet again for an unknown period. So to navigate the system, to even get a minimum benefit to help me out during this time where I'm having all these medical issues, because I believe it would be the SSDI, the Social Security Disability Income. And I know they have benefits also where you can collect a partial benefit and, you know, get some benefit for schooling or retraining. So I'm, because I'm only 39, so...
Anthony, let us pick it up right there, if we may. I think we've got a bunch of elements on the table here, and I wonder what Lawrence Kutlikoff is thinking as he listens.
Well, I'm thinking that you did enormous service for the country, and and we can't, you know, really thank you enough. And
16 years in the military—that's not nothing.
Yeah, and to be treated this way is just to me disgusting. I think that there's a couple issues here. I'm not an expert on the Wounded Warrior aspect of the system, but my guess is that they should have been crediting some of your years that you were unable to work with your earnings history appropriately. But then there's also the question of you're getting onto Social Security disability. What I'd like you to do is just contact me privately by email. You can find me, find my name and email address on my website, kotlikoff.net, and let me see if I can be of any help to you.
That's a pretty good personal offer, Anthony. I hope you take Lawrence Kutlikoff up on it. Let's go to Maya, Acton, Massachusetts. Maya, what's your situation?
Hi, I'm a 38-year-old mother of three kids, and I only worked a handful of years full-time before cutting down to about 8 hours a week teaching at the local synagogue. And my question is, what will it look like? I may not go back to work full time for 10 or 15 years, and I wonder what the payout will look like for, you know, retirement age for us, or for me, frankly, as one who isn't working.
And with what you're expecting, maybe
luxury to be ignorant about this, but I sort of am. You know, I haven't looked into what that will mean for me.
How many years do you think you might stay at this very low level of employment, Maya, with your kids before you would consider full-time work again?
I think 15 to 20 years.
Okay, so for a long time. Larry, what do you think?
Well, the Social Security is taking your earnings record, your covered earnings record, and all the earnings up through age 60, they blow them up based on the economy-wide wage growth that has been that we've experienced up through age 60. So if you earn money at age 40, they're going to blow it up for about 20 years. They're going to index it up. And then they take your earnings after age 60, and they basically rank these from top to bottom, and they take the highest 35, and then they average them, and they take this average of these 35 highest years of earnings and put them into a benefit formula. So if you have zeros in those years or very low earnings in the top 35, that's going to hurt your ultimate benefit. Now, the good news is that the system is progressive. So even if you have a low average monthly earnings, you'll still get a relatively decent benefit relative to those earnings. And also, when your children do leave home and you go back to work, the increase in your benefit associated with working for another year, because you're going to be replacing a year of zero earnings with a positive year, can be very substantial if you get a decent paying job. And indeed, it can actually more than the future benefits that you're going to get from working in an additional year can actually pay for the extra taxes you have to pay for to the system. So the system is kind of designed to give people incentives to stay home with their children. It was really designed by men, probably, you know, white men in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. Some of the features are, you know, there for a world we lived in back then, but not necessarily for modern ages, for the modern times.
Maya, I appreciate your call and good luck. I hope that's helpful to you. Larry, you describe our Social Security system as a disgrace, I'm quoting you here. And part of that is around its financing. I want to look at that. Part of it is just around how complicated it's become. And again, I don't think many people fully anticipate that, because the statements we get in the mail make it look pretty simple. Why has it become so complicated over the years? This is not, I wouldn't think, an issue of, I don't know, big lobbyists coming in to change. Who would have an interest in these relatively modest payouts that come at the end of the line? How did it get so complicated? Why?
Well, they never really planned it out ahead of time. Over time, they added survivor benefits, and I'm not sure exactly when they introduced spousal benefits and child benefits. And then, you know, so it was done piecemeal. And then you had congressional aides and Social Security bureaucrats deciding on their own what they thought was a fair thing to do.
You're right that they were trying to be fair, but somehow that grew the bramble.
Yeah. I'll give you an example. Everybody who's married or divorced can get, if they play their cards right, if they've been divorced after being married for 10 or more years, they can get a full spousal benefit by waiting in the case of a married couple, it's just one of the two spouses. In the case of a divorced couple, it's both individuals. They can collect a full spousal benefit by taking just their spousal benefit at full retirement age and waiting until 70 to collect their retirement benefit. Now, this was a provision that was permitted for the disabled, as far as I could understand, and others, up till December 23rd of this past year, when on pretty much Christmas Eve, Social Security changed some rules in what's called the Program Operating Manual system, and denied this full spousal benefit to the millions and millions of disabled workers. And that was all done by some Social Security bureaucrat interpreting the history of the rules in the way that she wanted to interpret it.
And it's done overnight.
And she denied, you know, millions of dollars of benefits, you know, tens of millions of dollars of benefits to disabled workers. So, you know, we actually tell disabled workers they can do this in the book. And now the book's wrong in that provision because they changed the thing after the book went into press.
That fast. And yet you can imagine the pressure on Social Security to find ways to rein in their expenditure. I mean, here's a question that we've got online. James, simple question to you. He says, question, how long will it be before Social Security no longer exists? You know, that presumption is out there that there's some cliff out there, and there's a lot of pressure on to do something about it.
Well, the system is getting in worse shape every year. Its unfunded liability is now $25 trillion. That's right in the trustees' report. Now, the problem is the politicians don't want to talk about this, and the trustees themselves are political appointees. They don't even mention this table. They tucked it way into the appendix. They don't even mention that the system is in far worse shape than Detroit's pension system. They're using very, you know, benign language about the problems with addressing Social Security's long-run finances.
But defenders say, don't talk about a cliff. We can fix this, and we have to because so many Americans depend on it, so we will.
Well, Herb Stein, who was the chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers under Richard Nixon, used to say that something that can't go on will stop. And my view is that something that can't go on will stop too late. So every year that we don't address these problems means that we have more older people who get left off the hook for dealing with them, especially the richer ones, and they get to consume more. And then we leave a bigger bill, bigger problem for younger people.
And there we are. There's the Social Security challenge. We'll look at how that might be addressed. I'm Tom Ashbrook with Lawrence Kotlikoff, co-author of the new book, Get What's Yours. This is On Point. So let me get one more question. We'll come to your solution. Paul in Carlisle, Massachusetts. Paul, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's
yeah.
a good program. And, Professor, you're doing a great service in what you're...
Thank you.
...with your book. Believe it or not, I'm a pension actuary, and I applied for Social Security online last night, and I don't understand what the optimum situation is, so I have a very specific...
Oh, boy, we're doomed.
Go for it.
We're doomed.
Well, yeah, the system is doomed actuarially, as the professor has cited.
Oh, I meant individually, but what's your question, Paul?
So my question is, I'm going to start collecting my benefit in June when I turn age 70. My wife does not have a lot of earnings, Social Security earnings, so she's going to get my spouse's benefit, and she'll be 64 and a half when I turn 70. What's the optimum age for her to start collecting the spouse's benefit?
She should wait till 66 and file just for a spousal benefit on your record, and then at 70 she should file for her own retirement benefit, which may exceed her spousal benefit, in which case she'll get the larger of the two. The fact that you waited till 70 is not only good for your own retirement benefit, you're going to start with the highest possible retirement benefit, but also the widower benefit, the widow benefit that you'll leave your spouse when you pass away, if you predecease her, will be higher, will be the same benefit check that you're collecting. So she'll get so people need to understand that waiting to collect the retirement benefit can have a big return, not just for their own retirement benefit, but also for their surviving wives, their surviving divorce exes, their surviving children.
Paul, thanks for your call. We wish you many happy returns. All right, Larry, take us to your fix. You have some admiring words for New Zealand, where they have like a one flat government paid sort of pension that everybody gets. It's all the same thing, much, much simpler than ours here. What would you do with the American system, A, given its liabilities, and B, given its complexity?
Okay, and this is just my view, not my co-author's view. They strongly disagree with a lot of things I think about in terms of, say, and think about the system's finances and fixes. But what I would do is I would freeze the current system in place. I would pay everybody off what they're owed over time. So in your case, Tom, since you're only about 35,
yeah.
we would fill – there'd be zeros filled in your earnings record after the freeze occurs. So you would get all your accrued benefits in retirement, but nothing more. And then we would put everybody into what I call the personal Social Security system, where everyone who's working would contribute 8% of their pay to an individual account.
This is sort of the George Bush plan.
No, not George Bush. Miles away from the George Bush
okay.
plan. And I didn't, you know.
Okay.
Dramatically different. The account contributions would be divided 50-50 between spouses. So if you have a non-working spouse or one who's earning less, they have an equal size account. The government makes matching contributions on a progressive basis
okay.
so that we have progressivity fairness. Then all the account balances are invested not by anybody on Wall Street. Wall Street makes not a penny on this proposal,
okay,
but by a single computer that invests in a global market-weighted index fund of stocks, bonds, and real estate, so that it's done by a computer, and you're just holding the market. And then the government would guarantee that at retirement age, the return that you would get on your account balance would at least equal what you put in adjusted for inflation. So the government would guarantee a zero real return. And then the same computer would take each cohort.
Could be higher, but guaranteed at least.
Yeah, at least
you don't
zero.
Lose.
So there's a floor to this. But everybody's getting exactly the same return because everybody's invested
mm-hmm.
the same way.
Yeah.
And then the each cohort would have their account balance gradually sold off, these assets sold off gradually over 10 years and converted into inflation and index bonds, government inflation-protected bonds.
We've got 20 seconds. Will they end up better
and
or worse off?
And then pay off as a pension, inflation-protected pension. They'll be worse, better off. We'll all be better off under this plan.
And solvency,
sure.
If you do that tomorrow before I turn 36?
This is fully funded solution, and there's other plans that would come up with the money to pay for it.
Lawrence Kotlikoff, you can follow everything he thinks ought to be done. He calls it the Purple Plan, I think, for Social Security.
ThePurpleplans.org. ThePurpleplans.org.
Okay. It's right there. The book is Get What's Yours, The Secrets to Maxing Out Your Social Security. And a lot of people interested, maybe desperately interested in doing just that. Larry Kotlikoff, it's always great to see you. Thank you so much for coming in today.
My deep pleasure, Tom.
Listeners, a link to more at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for your questions and calls today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.